Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Last October, Secretary Vilsack announced that he was going to make available over a period of time $1.2 billion for additional market development work to be undertaken by basically the cooperator community, although other organizations are more than welcome to apply.
Deputy Administrator for an Ag Service, Mark Slupak.
We issued a notice of funding opportunity and all of those things, and we made announcements at the end of May allocating $300 million, which had been obligated, and groups are beginning to spend that money. But there was such an overwhelming demand for that $300 million, we got over $1 billion in applications, that we decided, as USDA, that maybe it was time to release some more funding and make it available again. So we have a $300 million opportunity out right now.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Two key USDA reports showed that U.S. farmers are set to produce a big crop this fall. Betty Resnick, an economist at the American Farm Bureau Federation, says the production number looks especially good for soybeans.
Corn is projected to have a record yield of 183.1 bushels an acre, up 3.3 from last year's record and above trend line. For soybeans, they're projected to have a record yield at 53.2 bushels an acre and are also above trend line. The August WASDE and crop production report also reported 1 million additional planted acres of soybeans. So overall, soybean production is up over 10% from last year. And ending stocks are up 24% from just the July report.
Resnick says August is a crucial time for assessing the expected productivity of U.S. crops.
The August crop production report is the first month where we have survey and satellite data informing yield estimates for both corn and soybeans. It also incorporates Farm Service Agency certified acreage data into its crop production estimates. So we're getting closer to an end result on those crop production estimates.
She says to keep an eye on crop progress throughout the next couple of months.
August is the most important month for soybean growth and development, so everyone's be watching the weather to see what happens for the rest of the month and see its impacts on yields. In terms of reports, every Monday generally, we get crop progress and condition reports, and the next major crop production and WASDE reports will be on September 12th.
Chad Smith, Washington.
Thanks, Chad. Now, Rich Nelson is chief strategist with Allendale.
We do have this world wheat story, which is tightening, and we're now at 10-year lows on a stocks-to-use basis for the world side. But certainly from the U.S. side, we've been a little concerned about this very, very strong crop we've got this year, both from winter wheat and a spring wheat discussion. Positive for today's report, even though we did see another yield increase, we were a bit surprised by a good drop for acreage, down 900,000. So on the wheat story, we're now seeing this balancing point. A tight world story, but U.S., maybe now we're getting past the worst of our large crop news here.
So again, global wheat stocks lowest since 2016, and France looking at their smallest crop in 40 years.
USDA did reflect this a little bit with today's numbers here. They dropped that whole EU crop, and France is the largest producer, but simply one among many. They dropped that whole group by 2 million tons in this report. You might be able to argue there's just a little bit more still ahead in these next couple months. One light concern we had is we'll point out that that was offset by increases for crops out of Ukraine, Kazakhstan, and as well as that Australia. So it was something we've been looking for. We got what we hoped for with the EU story, but not the only story going on right now on the world basis here.
And what about the surprise in cotton?
I've got to say, I was a bit surprised by this acreage revision post on today's update here. We dropped this new crop planted acres by, in this case, 500,000 acres, which, you know, keep in mind, we're only looking at 11 or 12 for cotton as a total. So pretty good size drop there. Harvested acres were lowered by 1 full million ton. So as far as our discussion about a rising production story, yes, it is still in place here for this year, but perhaps not as much. So keep in mind, we still have stock numbers still over the prior 2 years, but the main message is not as bad as it could have been here today.
Are higher prices possible?
I will point out, though, we probably need to be a little more muted in how much of a strong rebound we expect. You know, we still have this overhang from a larger supply story still with us. And on top of that, there's still some concerns about the export story in these months ahead here, what type of China demand may be seen or may not be seen. So I do think there's a little higher pricing for cotton, but we probably can't get too excited about hoping for a large, large rebound here just yet.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
As a trained trucker,
effect of elections and such.
In my opinion, as a trained trucker, and this is what we should be looking at, is training truckers instead of coming out with all kinds of electronic devices to dumb down the industry. Let's train the people behind the wheel to drive the truck.
Louis Pugh is Executive Vice President of the Owner Operators Independent Drivers Association. And answering a question during a House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee hearing from Doug LaMalfa, a farmer and representative from California.
I hauled frac sand for a long time down West Virginia in the mountains. You have to know what you're doing to drive off road and go up the side of a mountain. I mean, I was pulled up the side of a mountain with a dozer. It was so steep. You can't make computers, in my opinion, that can do these kind of things. And you know what? We all forget, and you said it yourself, Congressman, computers have bad days too. I can't get my freaking phone to sync to my 2022 Ford pickup truck half the time. Now, I think that's pretty basic technology, but it doesn't work a lot. But now we want to put all these things into trucks and say, hey, you're safer now. We teach pilots to fly the plane before we teach them to fly the plane with all the technology.
Well, we've had an issue with 737s that they had too much gadgetry on there they're relying on instead of the pilot knowing how to fly the plane.
Automation may not be the way to go.
The more automated it is, the easier it is for people to get lazy on automobiles. Truckers are pretty disciplined, but talk quickly about the automatic shutoff devices for reaching hours of service. Now, since these things can glitch, my tractors glitch, my combines glitch, I mean, what kind of scenario would you see of a possible engine shutoff because it reaches hours of service by while somebody is still actively driving? What's the possibility of that?
To be clear, Congressman, I don't think there's really a device that shuts your truck off because you're nearing out of service. You do have the ELD in your truck, which keeps track of your hours of service. And what that will do is once you go over, it's going to flag you in violation.
Right.
Where that becomes a problem, if I may, is drivers every day are left with this decision on whether they can park their truck in a safe place to take a break or be in violation to try to find a safe place. We saw a tragic accident in Illinois 6 months ago where a bus hit a truck that was illegally parked. That trucker had to make that decision, and he was tired, so he pulled off on that ramp to get a break because we don't have enough parking in this country. I drove by that ramp last week going back to Kansas City from my home in Ohio visiting family. That ramp on Sunday morning at 8:30 in the morning, there was 10 trucks down that ramp and out along the side of the highway, that same ramp, because we still have nowhere to park these trucks.
I've seen them, yep. And then we still have the problem, are they carrying a hazardous product or livestock that, you know, they got caught in traffic and they need an extra bit of time? There isn't that discretion to get to a location that's safe or be able to offload the livestock. You know, sometimes you need an extra hour, and then the rules come down so hard upon them. So in general, what we're hearing is that for and close on this, Mr. Pugh, that we have a general regulatory direction that seems to take away the ability of the individuals to make good decisions, make safe decisions, because the government's overriding and a device is overriding. Is that the general feel of your drivers, of your industry?
Yes, I think that's the general feel. I think my drivers would like to start seeing common sense regulation that's coming from experienced truckers, and instead of making regulations on a false, fake driver shortage narrative, which we've seen over and over and over, that's where this electronic stuff is, because we keep saying we have this driver shortage that we don't have. We have a training shortage, we have a parking shortage, we have a pay shortage. We don't have no driver shortage. So let's keep people in this industry. Let's listen to the people who do the job.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Relatively small changes on the meat and livestock side this month.
Mark Jackanowski is chairman of USDA's World Ag Outlook Board.
Beef production up 80 million pounds for 2024. Now, again, we're shifting into calendar years. And beef production up just reflecting higher slaughter pace, partially offset by lower weights. Pork production down a bit. On the other hand, that is reflecting just third quarter slaughter data and a little bit lighter weights. Didn't make any change for 2025 in for pork. Broilers and turkey for the current calendar year, truing up to recent production and hatchery data. And now we are a little bit more confident in our turkey forecast as well, which we reduced last month, but we have some additional data suggesting a little bit of a tightening up of the production there. reflecting the low prices and really poor margins in the turkey sector. And that lower production we expect to carry into, or the production reduction we expect to carry into 2025, although still a little bit of a year-over-year increase. Steer prices continue to be strong, very strong demand for fed cattle. So just based on observed prices, raised $1.25 per hundredweight for 2024, and then that carries into the first quarter of 2025 there as well. Hogs saw a little bit of strength in the third quarter on the hog price, observed hog prices, but overall we're not seeing any real sustained demand strength, so we expect prices to continue to weaken into 2025. Lowered our hog price forecast this month by $1 per hundredweight, and that would be down year over year, $1.63 per hundredweight. Broilers and turkey, again, for the current calendar year, just truing up to recent price data. Turkey prices still very weak, fairly poor demand, but we think prices likely bottomed in 2024 and should start to strengthen as we get into next calendar year. Meat trade, not a whole lot. Main thing to note here is now we have June census trade data, so we got 6 months of the year under our belt to talk about. Pulled back our pork production forecast, again, just kind of truing up to that recent trade pace that we're seeing. Seeing a lot of export competition, especially from Brazil, also a strong U.S. dollar might be reducing our competitiveness to some degree there. The rest of the changes are pretty minor. Beef import forecast raised again this month, strong demand for processing grade beef, primarily from Oceania. And dairy. Main thing here, both 2024 and 2025, production is down. Our production, our change is down this month for both years. We're seeing some constrained heifer supplies, so lower cow inventories, and especially for 2024, lower milk per cow, reflecting some recent heat stress, presumably. In terms of trade, small changes, not much of a story there. I mean, basically, we're seeing strong prices in the U.S. and internationally. Tight production, strong demand. So in terms of the U.S. and global trade balance, we're kind of in a tight equilibrium there, and fairly small changes this month.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The ACRE Act is the Access to Credit for Our Rural Economy Act. And in D.C., we got to shorten everything to an acronym. So ACRE seemed like a good one to go with there.
Ed Elfman is Senior Vice President for Ag and Rural Banking Policy at the American Bankers Association.
But what ACRE does, essentially, is it removes the taxation on income earned from interest on farm real estate loans and rural homeowners and aquaculture. And none of you still have any idea what I just said, right? It's a complicated tax bill, essentially. But think about it this way. Interest rates are a combination of two things, cost and risk. On the risk side of the world, you can do things like guarantee a loan through USDA. That helps to lower risk. You can make your payments on time over and over again. That helps to lower your credit score, which lowers your risk. There's a lot of things along those lines you can do on the risk side, but that's pretty stuck in stone where it is. On the cost side of interest rates, what sets up an interest rate is the combination of keeping your bank open, hiring your employees and paying them, and then paying your taxes, right? So interest rates, combination of cost and risk. We see if we can take the tax side away on that cost side, that will help lower interest rates. And our analysis shows the interest rates will be 50 to 150 basis points lower with the ACRE Act coming into place. It should be noted, too, that on the tax side of the world, there are lenders that already have this tax exemption. Banks are one of the lenders that don't have the tax exemption. So what we're trying to do is level that playing field so all lenders to agriculture are on the same taxation. We get that level across the board. It creates more competition. What does more competition do? Drives down costs. Because if you have lenders competing with each other on level playing fields, that's going to ultimately help the farmer and rancher have lower interest rates.
What about stress testing it?
First of all, we've got a lot of ag groups looking at acre right now. And some of them are already having it as part of their policy portfolio. We're seeing it especially at the state level. Quite a few states have added it to their policy books across the board. It's not just one commodity or one animal group by any means. It's across the board. We're seeing commodity groups look at acre. So it passes that stress test. Ag groups are supportive of the legislation. The other side is when you're doing tax bills, you're going to have to go through a hearing at some point. We're hopeful to have a hearing in the near future. It's always hard to tell. I mean, you mentioned earlier how few legislative days we have left at this point. So getting a hearing is going to be a little bit harder as we get into the end of the year. But we do want to have that hearing to really discuss the merits of the legislation, which is, to what your term earlier, it's another stress test to make sure that members of Congress can cross-examine and ask those questions and see how it actually helps their constituents. And we believe we have the right argument to help their constituents. And then at the end of the day, you've got to make it fall into other, maybe larger piece of legislation, things like tax reform, for example. We're going to have a lot of issues with agriculture and rural things in the next tax reform bill. And we believe that acre should be part of that conversation. So whether acre goes as a standalone, which would be great to get done as a standalone piece of legislation, or as a part of a larger conversation around taxes and agriculture and all of that, we'd be glad to see it go either way. So we're not picky on getting it done, but we do believe we need to get it done for rural America to help bring those costs down.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We continue to see cattle production is very cyclical.
Chris Swift is with Swift Trading Company in Brentwood, Tennessee.
All throughout my career, I have been told that, and I have seen it, and it's a little bit of a boom and bust type business, some similar to the energy markets there, where it's either really, really good or it's really, really bad, and there's very few times where it's status quo. But we have really become very interested in the last 4 years because we're coming off a major low of excessive building of the herd. When we reached to the 2020 level, we saw a large influx of liquidity come out into the country because of the government spending $3.5 trillion for the COVID relief. And that began to boost the economy, boost cattle production, beef consumption, because people had money now that may not have had that money before. It continued to roll until really just about this summer. Because through the last 2 years, it has been seen by the industry that if we can't keep killing at this rate, we're going to run out of cattle and run out of beef. So the industry began rationing cattle. They began keeping the price up so high that fewer and fewer people could participate in the industry. To the consumer, we see retail beef prices still at the highest level for 4 years now, again, rationing the consumer from over-consuming and even raising the price that much higher. So interesting how that the industry has been able to do that, and we have increased our imports, we have decreased our exports, and we have started to explore alternative markets in the beef and dairy cross. I find that a very interesting aspect, and as we see more and more investment dollars go into that particular beef-dairy cross, we think it's here to stay and will continue to make a very important impact on beef production going forward. So fast forward to today, we've done a lot of things that has helped to control or to reduce that desire or demand to keep running prices up. And seemingly like we may have hit one of those levels where everybody's going to sit back and take just a little bit of breather. See, prices don't decline just a little bit. We're right in the midst of the consumer potentially having to shift again in discretionary spending, because we've not seen hardly any relief in the inflation at all. And that's seemingly what seems to be hampering people more than anything.
So we'll often refer to the cattle cycle. And what about this current cycle? Where are we?
I believe that this cycle is complete, Tony. I think that we have run 4 years in an upward market, and the industry has done a fabulous job at increasing beef production when a lot of producers never believed we could. So I have to lean on it from the aspect that I see economic aspects going on that don't lead me to believe that the consumer will be able to continue to spend at the levels they have for the last 4 years. Therefore, I have to believe that with a really high price of beef and a really high price of cattle and the consumer unable to spend at those levels again, we see the price come down. We already saw between the 1st of August and this week an enormous drop in the futures. And what we did is we went from an even basis to now a very sharp positive basis, and we've shifted the risk now. For those that needed to sell, it's not quite as good to sell out into the future as it is today. But when we look at the cattle feeder that needs to procure inventory, he's able to buy product in the future cheaper now that he couldn't be able to before in the past.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The main thing to talk about here is on the production side.
Dr. Mark Jackanowski, chairman of USDA's World Ag Outlook Board on global soybeans.
Reduction in Argentina's crop estimate. That is Ministry of Agriculture data from Argentina. Partially offset by increased production in Benin, which doesn't make the list, but nevertheless, it's becoming an important exporter. On the upcoming crop year, the 2024 crop year, the change in the U.S., as you can see there, that kind of dominates the global production change, increase in global production, but also some production increases in some of the foreign nations as well, mainly reflecting area changes in government data. So India, that's an area change based on recent government data. Also, increased production out of Ukraine, Russia, and Benin. The global soybean balance sheet, so starting again with the old crop year, trade up this month, 2.2 million tons. Brazil, increased exports out of Brazil account for 2 million of that, so some strength there. Ending stocks. Made an important or noteworthy change in our, you can see our China import forecast raised by 3.5 million tons this month. And that, as we've been doing recently, as you know, that reflects export shipments to China from other countries reported through July. So a lot of strength there. And so globally ending stocks up, driven mainly by that increased stocks in China. Partially offset by lower stocks out of Brazil and Argentina. On the new crop year, brush up a little bit, a little bit less than a million tons there. Mainly higher crush in various importing countries, as well as Russia and Ukraine. Trade up a million tons this month. Higher exports out of Ukraine, Russia, and the U.S., partially offset by lower exports out of Argentina, reflecting their smaller crop. On the other hand, on the other side of the ledger, imports higher by Egypt, the EU, Iran, and Turkey. And those are some of the countries also where we're seeing higher crush as well. Ending stocks raised this month, 6.5 million tons. That is mainly higher ending stocks in China, partially offset by lower ending stocks in Brazil. U.S. Soybean balance sheet, really no changes on the back here, so I'm just putting up the out-year forecast here. The big production change we got this morning from NAS kind of dominates the changes, as you can see there, up 154 million bushels. And with that big increase in supply, we raised exports 25 million bushels, and the rest of it just goes into stocks. So mainly this is just growing U.S. stocks, reflecting that higher production. season average price forecast reduced 30 cents per bushel this month, and that would be consistent with those higher stocks and larger supplies.
And this is Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
U.S. agriculture is currently running a trade deficit with other countries of almost $19 billion and growing. Now, some say this reflects a weak, non-competitive U.S. ag sector. However, one expert says, hold on a minute.
To look at the trade balance and say it's negative, so we're being outcompeted, that's really oversimplifying things.
USDA economist Bart Kenner says in most cases we are importing products like fresh fruits which don't compete with U.S. products, especially in the wintertime.
Another thing to consider is a lot of imports are inputs to products that get, you know, value added in the U.S. and then brought to market.
Bart Kenner says rising imports also show the U.S. economy is strong and that rising incomes are allowing more of us to buy more imported ag products. Gary Crawford, Washington.